This is Michael Cowan, and welcome to Trial Lawyer Nation.
You are the leader in the courtroom, and you want the jury to be looking to you for the answers.
When you figure out your theory, never deviate.
You want the facts to be consistent, complete, and credible.
The defense has no problem running out the clock. Delay is the friend of the defense.
It's tough to grow a firm by trying to hold on and micromanage.
You've got to front load a simple structure for jurors to be able to hold on to.
What types of creative things can we do as lawyers, even though we don't have a trial setting?
Whatever you've got to do to make it real, you've got to do to make it real. But the person who needs convincing is you.
Welcome to the award-winning podcast, Trial Lawyer Nation. Your source to win bigger verdicts, get more cases, and manage your law firm. And now, here's your host, noteworthy author, sought-after speaker, and renowned trial lawyer, Michael Cowan.
We're going to start a new feature on this podcast. It's Ask Michael and Mallory Anything. If you have anything you'd like to ask either Mallory or me, we're going to start doing an episode every couple months where we're going to answer your questions. So just send them in to me at michael@cowanlaw.com, and Mallory and I will answer them. Anything from, you know, legal strategy, marketing management, anything else in life you want to talk about, we'll be glad to talk about it with you. Again, ask Michael and Mallory anything. Just send us an email. We'll be glad to answer your questions. Today on Trial Lawyer Nation, I have David Craig. David is a fantastic truck accident lawyer out of Indianapolis, Indiana. He's also a good friend. David, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Michael, for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. So for those of us in the audience who haven't met you yet, tell us a little bit about you.
I am the grandfather of six children.
Wow.
I am the father of three children. And I'm married to my wife, who I met in high school and been together since 1976. So I think those are probably the most important things about me. Family is extraordinarily important to me, and I'm fortunate and blessed that two of my three are attorneys in my office, and one of my three is a professional videographer and does all my settlement videos and other videos for the firm.
Well, later on, I'm definitely going to try to get some free advice from you. I've got a son who wants to go to law school, and I want to get some advice on how to do that. But before we do that, I met you through, we're both on the board of the Academy of Truck Accident Attorneys, and you know, I've met you in that world. What made you decide that you wanted to be a truck lawyer?
You know, it's probably been 30 years. I've been practicing for 40 years. About 30 years ago, I had a client come in my office who was inside a building, who got hit by a dump truck, fully loaded, that went off a highway, through a parking lot, through a building, and hit him. And I had never handled a truck case, any type of commercial motor vehicle case. And I was a brand new lawyer, and I was scared to death. And so I was too scared to make a mistake, so I read and studied everything I could. Back then, they didn't have, you know, the ATAA. They didn't have these trucking groups or trucking seminars all over the country. They didn't have the books like your book. They didn't have all those things. And so I had to talk to other lawyers. But then I also learned so much from talking to experts. So I would hire experts, truck mechanics, truck drivers. And so I learned a ton. And I really, and the gentleman, you know, his truck came through, dumped him and buried him in a pile of pea gravel. And I found the case fascinating. I found the case rewarding because I was helping somebody who really needed help. At that point, I was doing all kinds of litigation. And I found it challenging because the trucking company hired a really good defense firm, and they spent a lot of money. They hired a lot of experts, and they really tried to intimidate the hell out of me in the process. And being a young attorney, you know, I studied, I learned what I needed to know, and I enjoyed that area. I enjoyed helping that client. I found out they pushed me because I quite frankly, most cases settle. And so here I was young, and so it settled the first day of trial after I picked a jury, because I don't think they ever thought I would ever go that far. We had said we were going to settle for X number. They wouldn't do it. And after I picked a jury, He asked to approach the post, the counsel asked to approach the bench and gave us everything we asked for. So that was my first time, and that was over 30 years ago. And it was fascinating. I enjoyed it. And I eventually moved to personal injury and then decided, you know what? I really like that case. I liked that was really rewarding to me. And so kind of niched into that area.
What makes trucking cases different than other kinds of accident cases?
You know, they're unique. I mean, one of the things is that you're dealing with very sophisticated defense lawyers and insurance companies and trucking companies, claims people. You know, in a car crash, you may have very inexperienced claims people. Even the attorneys sometimes are inexperienced. You don't find that in trucking. In trucking cases, these folks are prepared to do you damage if you're the victim. They're prepared to protect their assets and protect their trucking company and their truck drivers. And so I think that's the biggest thing that's different is that the amount of resources they have to fight you is extraordinarily different. Now, it also, you know, obviously the vehicles are different. The braking systems are different. The weight, the stopping distance. I mean, there's a whole lot of things different. There's a lot more data that's available, although that's changing as cars become more sophisticated. But the reality is the vehicles, the wrecks are different. The vehicles are different. But I think the thing that's scariest is that really the defense lawyers and the insurance companies are so much more sophisticated. This is what they do day in and day out. And you and I both have met lawyers on the defense that they have contracts that they have to be at the scene within so many hours after a wreck. You don't see that when it's a car crash. You know, they're changing the sometimes changing the facts. And they're doing things to protect themselves. And the other thing is the truck driver, that's their livelihood. And so they're worried about having an at-fault wreck. And so they're more apt, I think, to fudge the truth because it's their livelihood and they don't want to lose their livelihood. Whereas somebody in a car crash may admit that it's their fault.
I think another thing makes trucking, and people may criticize me because I'm saying truck accident, and we never use the word accident at trial. We say crash, we say collision. There's some good psychological reasons for that. But when we're marketing to the public, and we want the right keywords to go out on this podcast so people are looking for truck accident attorneys, they'd find one, the public uses truck accident. So that there's a reason that we sometimes say accident, even though we would not do that in trial. Because right. I know I'm going to get a comment or an email saying, you should know better. I do know better in trial, but I also, you know, you and I want to, like everyone else, want to get some cases. And so I think one way that truck crash cases are different, as well as in addition to the fact that you have a more sophisticated defense, is that there is a body of knowledge and there's a learning curve. I mean, regulations, secondary sources like preventable accident manuals, driver manuals. But you can, when you get all this, you have a really good set of rules that are really hard for them to fight because they're government and industry rules that cover so many of the situations and 95% plus of the crash types you have. And so they become a lot of fun and really it's an area that really rewards mastery, rewards the work you put in, because when you master that stuff, it is really hard to beat you.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, it's an area you can learn. I mean, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations, the state laws, the CDL manuals, the Keller, there's so many different books out there. Your book, there's so many good books that have been written by other attorneys that help you master the knowledge that you need to handle these cases. And they are fun. I mean, they are fun. And also, you know, all the trucking defense lawyers know that they know what it is. Oftentimes, the truck drivers will say whatever they're going to say, no matter how well they're prepared. And so that's also very helpful because they rarely know the rules. They may have a book in their glove compartment, but they probably haven't picked that book out in years to look at.
Yeah. And it's so much more affordable nowadays to buy a book, to go to, you know, like the Academy of Truck Accident Attorneys annual symposium, which is 3 days of deep dive into trucking litigation, as opposed to when you and I started. I'd fly off to Arizona to meet with Don Asa, may he rest in peace, or fly to Houston to meet with Roger Allen and, you know, pay them by the hour to teach me, which was money very well spent. But now you can wait and get educated through the books and the seminars and then go talk to the experts, you know, much more efficiently and effectively.
People like you, I mean, you know, you're be running the ATAA next year and You know, you're getting speaking at this next conference. And what I find is people like yourself and other people that are on the board and speakers, they like to share the information they have. And so they are very helpful in helping young lawyers or other or even experienced lawyers handle these cases. And they probably haven't seen any. There's probably nothing out there yet now that somebody hasn't seen or dealt with somewhere along the way. Even the ATA, if you just look at the number of webinars, you could the library of, you know, you could go through there and say, okay, this is the issue I have. And you're going to find experienced trial lawyers who have talked about that subject. And I think it's fantastic. So there's really, in my opinion, there's no excuse for a lawyer to handle a truck case and not do a good job at it. Because the information is there. If you're willing to put forth the effort and time, you can learn this area of expertise.
Now, at our upcoming ATA conference, and I'm not sure whether this episode is going to run before or after the conference on September 18th to 20th in Austin, but I know you are you have interviewed truck drivers. Tell me, you know, what are some things you've learned from going out there and interviewing truck drivers, not, you know, outside of the litigation context in a friendlier environment?
Yeah, you know, I think all attorneys that handle truck cases should spend time talking to truck drivers, because number one, you learn what's important to them, you learn what the issues are that they face. You and I both know when we take a deposition of a truck driver, oftentimes we're not trying to attack the truck driver. Oftentimes they're put in a bad situation and we're going after someone else. And so it's better to have a relationship or relate well to a trucker. And I think in order to relate well to a trucker, you have to actually understand and talk to a trucker. And quite frankly, I actually believe that I relate better to the truck drivers that I depose than their own lawyers relate to them. I've walked into many depositions and they're just meeting them for the first time. And the truck drivers are out sitting in the hallway and they're going like, are you my lawyer? Are you my lawyer? You know, it's like, no.
Yeah.
And the reality is the defense lawyers act like they don't want to spend time with these folks. And I'm just the opposite. I love spending time with them. I like talking with them. Very rarely do we agree on some things. But I'd like to know, okay, well, why do you think that? What's your really belief? And then you find they kind of have rules of thumb. They kind of have ways they think. And so that's extraordinarily helpful when you're talking to them. And in addition, I put out a lot of content on trucking, and I have a lot of truck drivers who respond to my content. And they really oftentimes vehemently disagree for like speed limiters, for example. And they will really bash it and talk about it and why. Well, that's okay. I learned something. I learned from them. I learned how they think, why they don't like it. And then it helps me deal with those type of issues. So I think talking to truckers is extraordinarily important if you want to, get to that next level of understanding them.
Yeah, I like speed limiters when I'm taking my son to school in the morning and I'm on the same road as the truck. I don't like them as much when I'm on a two-lane highway and there's one governor at 67 passing one at 65. They're blocking and you're in a 75-mile-an-hour speed limit.
Most of the time, the truckers say, well, how would you feel like a speed limiter on your car? You know, and it's really a legitimate issue. Is the truck driver's like, well, you want to put speed limiters on my truck? But nobody in cars wants speed limiters on their cars.
Well, just because we don't want them doesn't mean it's not a good idea.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
And when I was younger, I probably could have saved some real money if I had a speed limiter on my car.
I'm more willing to do them now than I was when I was younger.
Yeah. What are some things you've learned in talking to truck drivers? Any examples?
Yeah, a variety of things. I mean, I learned that that a lot of them have problems with the current group of truckers. I learned that, you know, there's not a courtesy that they thought that there used to be in the industry. Drivers are less courteous to each other. That not only is it the four-wheelers that are cutting them off, but semis are cutting each other off. They're rude when they go into the gas stations and the pumps, and they sit there, they go in and take a shower, leave their truck at a pump. And a lot of them don't like foreign-speaking, out-of-country drivers that are here that are driving in the United States. And whether you agree with it or you disagree with it, it's not important, but that the reality is truck drivers feel very strongly about it. And so it's, you know, so that was probably the biggest thing. They felt like the quality of the drivers and the training that they're getting from other countries isn't up to par. And as a result, they're running a lot of bad drivers driving bad equipment, especially smaller outfits. Those are some of the things. I think the speed limiters, the equipment, the most of them are against or don't like the driver-facing cameras. But the reality is the good ones, good drivers understand why they need it and are okay with it. So you get a mixture in speed limiters and the safety equipment that's available. Most of them are using, most of the ones I talk to at least are using the safety equipment and are getting used to it. Most of them don't like the crash avoidance type stuff because they're having problems with it. It's glitchy. So those are kind of some of the things that they talk to me about.
Yeah, on the cameras, I mean, I understand that, you know, nobody likes being watched while they're working, but that doesn't mean they're not a good idea, especially what they don't understand. For every case we've had where the camera really made the case, there have also been cases that they look good until we got the camera. And then when they sent us the video, we didn't take the case because the camera exonerated the driver.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, saved everybody a lot of hassle.
One of the drivers told me that, you know, they were for it because they're running into what they call ghost drivers. And they said, you know, they're running into these drivers that are just driving one driver, but they're registering two, and they're tandem drivers, and they're showing two drivers in a cab when in fact there's only one. And other truck drivers, commercial motor vehicle drivers, think it's dangerous, which it is dangerous. And so they're against it, and so they believe that the camera, the driver-facing camera, would help avoid that problem because it's clear it's the same person driving.
Why would they do ghost drivers?
Yeah, so because to make money, they want to get a load from here to there as quick as possible, and they have certain limitations in hours. And so these drivers, the bad drivers, look at it and say, hey, we're going to say we have two drivers. That way we can cover twice as much time distance and quicker. And some of these people are literally living in the cabs of their trucks, and they're driving those things 24/7, which is completely prohibited. But they do that by saying they have other drivers in the vehicle.
And clearly you can't do that without the trucking company being complicit in it, because someone has to set up both drivers in the electronic logging device system, and then someone has to decide to pay the one driver for both drivers' work.
Yep, absolutely.
Because they're not doing it for free. They're not driving the extra hours just to be nice.
Yeah. And I actually asked them, I said, well, so is that a big problem? I mean, it's something that I'm unaware of. And, you know, yeah. They said, no, it is huge. And then one truck driver told me that, you know, what they've seen is that when there's so what happens when there's a wreck? There's only one person in the truck. And I've had one of those. And the person said, yeah, they'll say, well, they got off at the last rest stop or the gas, last time they refueled, they had an emergency, a family emergency. They got out and they had to get a flight home. So, yeah, I learned a lot by talking to truckers.
Yeah, I think some of what you want to look for in those kind of cases, if you suspect that, is, you know, not only try to take a deposition. Now, they may still have someone, depending on how elaborate of a fraud they do, maybe they have someone pretend to be the other driver, but ask for the payroll records, ask for the W-2s and, you know, or 1099s that they did and ask what they paid the actual driver that was driving.
Yep.
And does that line up with the, you know, they pay them by the mile. Does that line up with the number of miles driven?
Yeah. Yeah. And typically if you're a victim of one of these wrecks and you are represented by a truck wreck lawyer, truck accident lawyer, they're going to know how to uncover the fraud. The fraud works perfect, you know, when you don't wreck. And so they're hauling these loads. As long as they don't wreck, nobody notices it. But when there is a wreck and you have a good attorney that understands truck accident law, they're going to uncover it. They're going to do the depositions. They're going to ask for the driver files. They're going to do a lot of different things. They're going to help you uncover that. Whereas somebody who doesn't understand truck accident law may not know, may never heard of a ghost driver. And so that's why it's important to pick somebody who actually knows what they're doing.
And these are often things that the police are not looking for, mm-hmm. or don't know how to look for. And, you know, if you don't act quick, because they only have to maintain the logs for a certain period of time. So if you don't act quick, those logs will disappear. And a lot of times the electronic logs are just set that, you know, after 6 months, they're automatically gone. So if you don't have your lawsuit on file, your discovery response sent out, I mean, even if you send them a preservation of evidence letter, a lot of companies would rather have, you know, whatever the consequences of a spoliation might be, than to actually have proof that they were committing fraud and knowingly breaking rules. So it's really important to get moving quickly on these cases.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't only practice law, you run a law firm. What are some of the things you've done, you know, as far as like systems and processes to effectively litigate truck accident cases, investigate and litigate them?
Yeah, I mean, so we do. I'm a managing partner. I have 10 lawyers in my firm, 50 employees. All my lawyers were law clerks of mine and came up that way. And so, I mean, one of the first things we did was we put in a rapid response team of our own. So we have an investigator. We actually have a couple, but we have somebody that's actually over the claims. So as soon as I get hired, I got hired Friday on a semi case in a construction zone. And so my rapid response team immediately goes to the scene. First thing they're doing is they're looking for cameras. They're looking for video, anything out there that might be there. They're looking at evidence on the roadway. They're looking for possible businesses or places that might have witnessed it, and they'll talk to those people. They're trying to find the vehicles. They want to find out where the vehicles are so that I can send my preservation letter out. They automatically do that. I sign it. We send preservation letters out immediately once I'm hired. But what more importantly, a lot of times we try to find the vehicle because it depends. I mean, I have lawyers licensed in Ohio, Kentucky, Iowa, Tennessee, Missouri. And so it depends on where this wreck is at. Certain areas are rural areas, even parts of Indiana. And so a truck may be sitting in a field. My rapid response team has to find that vehicle and then tell me what type of security is around that vehicle. Because if it's a catastrophic injury or wrongful death, it's the future of my clients depend on us doing the right things at the right time. And so I have had vehicles of the defense try to alter vehicles that were out in areas that weren't secured. So I will hire a private investigator to sit outside that vehicle and stay there 24/7 if necessary, so that nobody will go touch that vehicle without me getting a phone call. So we'll send out private preservation letters. But like you said, sometimes preservation letters are meaningless to certain insurance companies or trucking companies. You can't always get your lawsuit on file immediately to get a restraining order or a temporary restraining order. So you best thing to do is just let's hire a private investigator. They're not going to go out and mess with it when my person's sitting out there on the roadway or nearby. And I've actually literally have had, you know, I've had experts say, we're going to fly in from Canada, but we can't get there until this day, the defense experts. And then all of a sudden I get a phone call. Oh, they're there trying to download the truck. And we're like, no. And so I call the lawyer, the defense lawyer, and the defense lawyer, oh, I didn't know anything about it. And they immediately put a stop to it. But, you know, like you said, time is of the essence. And so the rapid response team was something that I felt like I needed to move quicker. I used to have investigators. I had people I relied upon, but sometimes they weren't available when I needed them immediately. And so I said, you know what, let's invest in having our own team of people that I can get anywhere in the areas that I practice in quickly. So that was one of the first things we did. And then I hired paralegals and I take them to the ATA conference. So every year I bring my paralegals. And this year, I think two of them are going to take the test to get certified. But I want them to know trucking. I want to invest in them, spend time with them. We have our own little training sessions, but I want them to hear from great lawyers like yourself and people who are speaking at the conference so that they can learn trucking. And then my lawyers are the same way. I take my lawyers down there to the ATA or any other type of trucking conference or seminars. We will take people and spend a lot of time learning the area. Then I hire experts quickly. So even though I've been doing this now 40 years, I'm not one of these guys like my partner, Scott Follows. He remembers and memorizes everything. I don't. I just don't. I don't try to. I don't. Even if I tried to, I wouldn't. I remember what I have to know for every case. And so every case, I'll know a backwards and forward for the leading up to the case and probably for 6 months after the trial, but it'll be gone then, except for the concepts. And so so I still talk to experts, and sometimes they're telling me the same things that I know, but every now and then they tell me something different or a unique spin. And so we get our experts in, hired immediately. So if I have, for example, I just had a case where a truck driver is the health, whether he passed out, whether he had a seizure, whatever. So I hired the doctor that I like to use. And we then, hey, look, I'm putting you, hiring you right away. Tell me the questions. Tell me what I should be looking for this condition. Should he have had his CDL, blah, 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 blah. And so getting the experts in early, coming up with a system, doing this consistently over and over and over again, and training your people and investing in your people so that they're top notch, your lawyers, but also your paralegals, your staff, truck cases, as you know, they're catastrophic and they turn a family's life upside down. So I don't really want to just hire paralegals. I have a psychologist who answers my phones and talks to the people, the very first intake. And then they talk to the lawyer, but that first call is like, okay, because I find psychology, folks are good listeners. I also have a social worker who has a social work degree, and she also helps, and she helps get people benefits and helps finding things and helping people get into facilities and going. And she's just part of the team. So my team consists of psychology major, a social worker, my private investigator, my rapid response team, my lawyers, my file managers who are trained in trucking. And I think that helps provide a higher quality than maybe some folks who don't focus on it.
And I think one great thing about having, let's say, your rapid response team is you could be on vacation somewhere and the right things are going to happen, even if without you having to stop spending time with your grandkids.
Absolutely. That's true. Although, as you and I both know, we'll go to the scene if we need to. They know that.
I absolutely will go to the scene when I need to, but I also sometimes take a vacation and leave my cell phone with my sister.
Yeah, well, see, I can't do that. but my kids are all lawyers here or work here. My wife runs my practice, so this whole firm is all these people here are like family to me. So, but yeah, you're absolutely right. You have to get away from time to time.
So you have two of your kids are working with you. I have a son. He's starting his junior year of college. He wants to come work with me now. He says he wants to go to law school. Assuming he doesn't change his mind in the next 5 or 6 years, what's some advice on integrating a child into a firm? Because it's really something that's been weighing on my mind.
Yeah, I think that, first of all, I cared more about raising good people than raising good trial lawyers. And so, I'm proud of my kids. I think they're all three of my kids are really good people. And when I brought them into my firm, they started working here at a young age. And they started off at the lowest positions in my law firm. And the great thing about that is that everybody was bossing them around. They learned, they worked hard. They were not treated any differently. I had one time my son was going to go something and my private investigator said he had shorts on and he was just going out to a police department to pick up something. And my investigator said, no, you go home and change. And my son immediately went home and changed. I never even knew about it till like months later. Right. My investigator said something to me. He said, "Hey, did Alex ever tell you?" And I go, "No." He goes, "Because your kids are good people. They're good workers. They treat us all. The person who cleans my office always came to me and said, "Hey, your kids treat me just like I'm a partner here." I think having your kids involved at early stage, whether they're not a boss of anybody, is a good thing because that way they earn the respect of the people they work with. I think bringing them in as an attorney without any experience working in my office, I don't know that it would have worked as well. I think especially with other lawyers, they earn the respect of the other lawyers. And then I always talk to the lawyers that I practice with about bringing them in. Now, all my lawyers have been, even Scott Follis, one of my founding partners of this firm, was one of my law clerks. So they all clerked for me, and so that including my kids. So I think that that's helpful as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Now, your practice used to be a lot like my practice in that it was almost all attorney referral. And you and I have had a lot of conversations because you've really inspired me. You've actually changed that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. And when I first started, I think like a lot of lawyers, I tried cases. And so when I would try cases, then word would get out. And then that whole county wherever I tried the case, then I would then all of a sudden be the go-to person in that county and word would spread. And And so I, you know, I got a lot of referrals that way, and probably 80% of my business was referral based. Then I got sick several years ago, and I had colon cancer, and stage three. And I was laying in the hospital. I was in there for 3 weeks, and it dawned on me, like, what happens if I'm not around? If I'm not around, how are we going to continue to get that business? Will we continue to get that business? And I wanted the firm to survive me. And I felt like, you know, even though I had good lawyers here, I was happened to be the one that usually went in and tried cases. So I was the face and the mouth of the firm. And so it dawned on me, is like, holy cow, my son's a lawyer here, my daughter's a lawyer here, and my business could dry up. I need to figure a way to generate business and not depend, be completely dependent on referrals. And then the second part of it was I had noticed that referrals in some of the smaller counties was going away. So the people used to be, you know, a prominent lawyer in a small county would get the bigger case, the truck case. But then all of a sudden with more marketing, lawyers who referred business were not getting as many cases to refer to me. We have to set out and figure a different way. And so now I can say that it's completely switched. I now have probably 80% of my business is direct to consumer. And 20% is referrals. And the funny thing is my referral business, though, and my referral income is higher than it was even back when it was 80%. So my business has grown so much that 20% is the same as 80% was, you know, 7 years ago, 8 years ago when I started this.
So what did you do to build the direct-to-consumer practice over the last 7 or 8 years?
The good news is it's not that hard. God, if I can do it, then most people can do it. So the reality is if you like people, which most trial lawyers, I think, good trial lawyers at least, they genuinely like people. And so we're used to talking to people. And so it was just a shift of instead of talking to lawyers the way lawyers like for us to talk, was talking to clients the way we talk to jurors and just talking to them, informing them. And so I just shifted from communicating to lawyers to what would clients, I've done this for years, just like you have. What do I find clients need to know? What do they want to know? What would they like? You know, what do they need to know that they don't even realize they need to know? And so we started putting out a lot of content, started redirecting our efforts to just really providing helpful information to people. Now, without the idea that, okay, they're going to hire me, let's just figure out what's going to help the consumer. And if we do a good job of helping the consumer, then some of those folks will call and hire us. And if not, they're at least going to be informed and they're going to hire somebody else that knows what they're doing. And so that's kind of what we've done. And we've put a lot of effort behind it. I actually find it more rewarding. I mean, I speak at conferences. I run my own trucking seminar here in Indiana with the Indiana Trial Lawyers Association. But I actually find it more rewarding to just talk to the consumer. I love just talking to ordinary folks. I mean, I went to St. Louis office, for example. We did a safety awareness thing where I just brought folks in and talked about trucking. One of the biggest complaints I get from truck drivers is, why don't people learn more how to drive around trucks? And that's really a good thing. How much time is spent in driver's ed actually dealing with safely operating around 18-wheelers or 40 tons of steel? Not a whole lot. And so, you know, we say, okay, well, maybe we ought to educate people on some of these things, stopping distance and some of the other issues. So I think it's providing helpful information to people, and then hoping that they'll either get to us or get to somebody that's good.
You talked about there's in marketing, you said the message, which is the content, and there's the medium. Like, how do you get that message to people? So how have you gotten that useful content in front of people that might need a lawyer?
Yeah, we've done a couple of things. I've written two books. One is Semi-Truck Wrecks, A Guide to Victims and Their Families. I wrote that in the year 2000, I think. I wrote a new book in 2005. It's Never Been Easier to Hire the Wrong Attorney. And both of those deal with, and were both bestsellers, and the second one has been a lot more popular, and both of them are geared towards providing information on how to get to the right attorney and what you should expect if you've been in a semi wreck. And we use any, they're available on Amazon, but what we find is that, and I give away, you know, any money we make off of, we give to charity. But the reality is that those are helpful. So that's been helpful. I do a podcast called After the Crash, which is just geared toward, which I've had you on, that is just geared towards helping people understand truck accidents, how to hire the right lawyer, what to look for, what kind of things can you expect to happen during the process of a case. And it's geared just to the consumer. I mean, I do get lawyers who listen to it and watch it, but I don't care. I mean, I'm aiming towards a consumer, somebody, and I've gotten calls from all over the country. From just ordinary people who say thank you, you know, and people I won't even use, I might recommend a lawyer in their community. What my other son, I have three kids, two of them are lawyers in my firm, but the other one is a professional videographer. And so he does all my videos. He does my podcast. And so we put out a lot of video content, on, you know, all social media platforms. I hired a journalism major, someone who has a master's degree in journalism. Because I mean, you can get AI, but that's not true to me. I mean, I want stuff whether my way is right or wrong, that's debatable. But the reality is, it just is me. I want to be genuine. I'll tell you what I think, no matter whether it's good, bad, indifferent, I'm going to be a straight shooter. And I want my content to be that way. And so we hire somebody who has a master's degree in journalism, and she does research and she hates AI because journalism majors don't like AI.
Yeah.
And so I get original content that I direct and say, hey, let's talk about this subject. You know, they just raised the speed limit on one of the big highways in Indiana. I'm like, what are they doing? I mean, instead of reducing speed, why are enforcing the speed limit? They're increasing the speed limit. There's going to be more fatalities. And so we did articles on it. So those are some of the things. A lot of content and people think, well, okay, we need to put content out. And if you use an SEO company or a website company, they use canned, you know, their big box canned stuff. And that's just not, to me, the right way. I would rather invest in the right people and have the right messaging. And that messaging comes from me and our firm. And we put a ton of it out there.
Well, I'm so glad to hear it works, not only because it means good people are going to good lawyers like you and your firm, but it also gives me hope as I try to do the same thing. I'm trying to follow in your footsteps and think we're working with some of the same people.
But scary because the good lawyers, people, if they don't know who you are, then they're bombarded with, billboards and commercials and direct mails and website advertising, and they advertise on your, probably advertise on your name. They advertise on my name. And the thing that's really scary right now is venture capital is entering our world, and they're buying their lead generation companies. And so sometimes people don't even realize that the thing they're clicking on is not even a lawyer. It's just a lead generation company. It's a company that's trying to sell these leads, and they don't really care who they sell them to. They'll sell them to any lawyer who's willing to buy them. And so what's really scary is people read an ad and they think they're getting a great truck accident attorney, and instead they're getting a company that's going to sell that lead to whoever will buy it. And maybe it's a good lawyer, maybe it's not a good lawyer, but when your family's livelihood and future is dependent upon it, you don't want to pick somebody you don't know. You don't want to pick a company that doesn't even, they don't even care. All they do is make money off of selling leads. And so there's so much out there that's scary that, you know, and so I'm happy that you can reach people by effective marketing. And it's not any different than reaching people through a jury trial. You and I both have been successful at trying cases. And if you can try a case, then you can figure out how do I message? How do I talk to people? Instead of 6, 11, 12, whatever kind of jury you have, depending on what state you're in, it's talking to hundreds of thousands of people, but it's basically the same.
So, you know, a lot of our listeners skew from very, very experienced lawyers to people that are still in law school. But in general, I think because it's podcasting, it's, you know, a little bit younger audience. for someone that's, let's say, a newer lawyer or just going out on their own, and they want to try to learn how to become a good truck accident lawyer, what advice would you give them?
I mean, the first thing is to actually spend the time studying. I mean, I just hate people who say, oh, well, I'll get a case and then I'll learn it. You know, if you want to be a truck accident lawyer, then learn the law. Learn, read the books. You know, I speak at law school occasionally, and I'll ask people, how, you know, and then usually people come when it's about, they want to be trial lawyers, because that's why I usually talk about. And I'll ask them, how many of you guys, you know, here in Indianapolis, for example, have walked over to the courthouse and watched a trial? None. How many of you, our Court of Appeals is right here, the Supreme Court is right here within walking distance of this campus. How many of you walked over and listened to an argument? None. What books are you reading? I always ask when I interview my law clerk, what books are you reading? It's amazing. I was reading Racehorse Haynes and Belli and all those people back, you know, when I was a kid, when I was in high school. And these people nowadays aren't reading stuff. And so there's it's never been easier to learn a body of law, no matter what kind of law it is, than it is right now. Podcasts, seminars, you know, books. And so the first thing I would do is say, take the time to spend studying. Then I would go find a great trial lawyer who is board certified in truck accident law, and I would try to work for him. Because I would learn, and I would want somebody who tries cases. You know, one of the things that drives me nuts is that, you know, a very small percentage of cases actually go to trial. But the insurance companies know who don't try cases, and the trucking companies know who don't try cases. So if you want to be a truck accident attorney, what I did was I started off learning to be a trial lawyer. And then I learned trucking. And so I think you need to know both to be successful.
Yeah, and all this talk, it's so hard to get a trial. I don't believe that. There is no shortage of cases where insurance companies are giving really, really insulting offers, especially when you go to the regular auto, you know, the Allstates and State Farms, and then some, there's worse than them out there now, you know, and so those cases need to be tried. Mm-hmm. Those companies need to be kept honest. In fact, there's, in states with, you know, bad faith or negligent failure to settle, there's actually some good opportunities to do well for the client while you're getting your trial experience.
Yeah.
And they're really low risk. I mean, they're not cases that you're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, or the client's, you know, their life is not going to be forever ruined if they don't take the settlement offer for 1.5 times the medical bills or something on a low damage case.
Yeah.
So let's go try some. It's fun.
Well, in our firm, my lawyers have to learn to try. So we do take other types of cases in, because you don't get to try that many semi cases. And yeah. So if you work them right and you have a reputation of somebody who tries them, then you even get to do less. But I want all my folks trying cases. And I always tell them, take the worst case. Those are the most fun to try. And they have the highest reward and the lowest downside. So take a case that nobody thinks you can win, because if you win it, you develop a reputation. And if you lose it, people are thinking, man, they're crazy enough to try that case. And so there's no downside to it. So just go try them. Plus, it's a heck of a lot of fun. Or if you find out you don't like it, then there's a different role you need to play.
Absolutely. And you don't need to be a trial lawyer to be a good truck accident lawyer. You just need to work in conjunction with a good trial lawyer so you don't have to settle your cases too cheap.
Absolutely.
Well, David, is there anything else I should ask you about?
No, I mean, I appreciate the opportunity to be on here. And I appreciate, you know, again, for young attorneys out there listening to Michael's podcast, I mean, I think is extraordinarily helpful. And just get yourself out there and learn from those people that are. There's never been somebody who's called me and said they wanted to learn about marketing, or they wanted to learn about trials, or they wanted to learn about trucking, that I haven't been willing to go have a beer with or have a cup of coffee with. And I think all good trial lawyers like teaching. And so I think that you'll find that there's a lot of people throughout this country that are more than happy to help you.
And if somebody does want to reach out to you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
So my law firm is Craig Kelly and Faultless, ckflaw.com. And you can call 1-800-ASK-DAVID. That's an easy number to remember. And or you can call contact me on my email, CKF. If you go ckflaw.com, you'll find my email in there.
And I will tell you, Faultless is the best name ever it would have been a great name for a defense lawyer, but if they have a comparative fault or contributory negligence allegation.
Absolutely. Yep. He gets that a lot.
Well, David, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you in a few weeks in Austin, Texas at the Academy of Truck Accident Attorneys Symposium. And thank you for everyone for listening, and join us next time on Trial Lawyer Nation.
Thank you for joining us on Trial Lawyer Nation. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you'd like to receive updates, insider information, and more from Trial Lawyer Nation, sign up for our mailing list at triallawyernation.com. You can also visit our episodes page on the website for show notes and direct links to any resources in this or any past episode. To help more attorneys find our podcast, please like, share, and subscribe to our podcast on any of our social media outlets. If you'd like access to exclusive, plaintiff lawyer-only content and live monthly discussions with me, send a request to join the Trial Lawyer Nation Insider Circle Facebook group. Thanks again for tuning in. I look forward to having you with us next time on Trial Lawyer Nation.
Each year, the law firm of Cowan Rodriguez Peacock pays millions of dollars in co-counsel fees to attorneys nationwide on trucking and commercial vehicle cases. If you have an injury case involving death or catastrophic injuries and would like to partner with our firm, please contact us by calling 210-941-1301 to discuss the case in detail and see where we can add value in a partnership. This podcast has been hosted by Michael Cowan and is not intended to, nor does it create, the attorney-client privilege between our host, guest, and any listener for any reason. Content from the podcast is not to be interpreted as legal advice. All thoughts and opinions expressed herein are only those from which they came.